Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. The World Health Organization reports that almost 6 million people a year die prematurely from tobacco-related illnesses. More than 80% of these preventable deaths occur in developing countries. As the World Health Organization marks World No Tobacco Day today, May 31st, WHO is promoting less attractive packaging as a way to reduce smoking. Plain packaging is recommended in WHO Framework Convention for Tobacco Control, FCTC guidelines, as part of a comprehensive approach to tobacco control. It includes large graphic health warnings and comprehensive bans on tobacco advertising, promotion, and sponsorship, among other things. So we will look at tobacco control today. And for more on the subject, we are joined via phone from Kampala, Uganda, by Dr. Ahmed Umar, Regional Advisor for the Tobacco Control Program in the African region of the World Health Organization. Dr. Umar, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you with us. And let me tell our listeners that if you'd like to participate in the program with question or comment, you can email us your thoughts at healthchat@voanews.com or post your questions on facebook.com/healthchat. And we will discuss tobacco control today in a moment. But first, the World Health Organization reports that growing evidence that plain packaging of tobacco products saves lives by reducing demand. Let's listen to this report by Lisa Schlein, VOA's Lisa Schlein.
The type of plain packaging of tobacco products proposed by the World Health Organization stands in sharp contrast to packs featuring rugged cowboys smoking in the great outdoors. Sample packages are black, with large warnings that smoking kills and graphic images of people dying from cancer. Douglas Betcher, WHO's Director for the Prevention of Noncommunicable Diseases, says the point of plain packaging is to reduce demand for tobacco by reducing the attractiveness of these products.
It very clearly labels tobacco for what it is, the only legally available product worldwide that, when used as intended, kills up to half of its users.
WHO reports almost 6 million people a year die prematurely from tobacco-related illnesses. This number is projected to rise to more than 8 million by 2030, with more than 80% of these preventable deaths in developing countries. Australia in 2012 became the first country to introduce plain packaging of tobacco products, along with new and enlarged health warnings. France and Britain have since followed suit. WHO says other countries, including Ireland, Norway, Singapore, Belgium, and New Zealand, are also planning to implement this measure. Ben McGrady is an Australian lawyer and technical officer at WHO. He says Australia conducted a 34-month review between December 2012 and September 2015 to gauge the impact of plain packaging.
Over that period, there was approximately 2 percentage point reduction in the prevalence of smoking in Australia. 0.55 percentage points is attributable to the packaging changes.
McGrady says there were an estimated 108,000 fewer smokers over that period as a consequence of the changes to packaging and labeling. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Dr. Umar, again, thank you for joining us. Let me have your reaction to Lisa Schlein's report about this plain packaging that WHO is recommending as a way to reduce smoking. To what extent can plain packaging make a difference?
Plain packaging should be looked at as part of comprehensive regulation laws for tobacco control. It is one of the jigsaws. It should not be looked at as a magic bullet. But on its own, plain packaging plays a very important role in tobacco control because it tackles an area that the industry has been misusing for a long time. That is making packages of tobacco products very attractive, using misleading phrases, and generally making it a billboard that walks around wherever a tobacco product is found. So plain packaging is really a very key component of a comprehensive tobacco control program that will result, as has been shown in Australia, it will result in a reduction in tobacco use. It's a very, very key element in the comprehensive tobacco control program. It works.
So when you talked about a comprehensive program, and we will talk about the other aspects, but just focusing on the plain packaging for a little bit, what is the reaction to the of the tobacco industry to uniformize this packaging? How do they feel about that?
The industry, if we take the Australian and the UK examples, they have reacted very viciously to the attempts by Australia and lately the UK to introduce the plain packaging. This by itself shows you that it works. In fact, in our experience, when governments try to introduce policy that is going to work, the industry will spend everything to block such policy. And when policy that doesn't really work is introduced, then usually they are supportive of such policy. So the industry has been vicious in the way they have reacted, but common sense and public interest has prevailed both in Australia and in the UK, and the legal system in those countries have upheld plain packaging as a government right in its attempts to protect its public.
Yeah, image is an important part of marketing a product, so we can see how they will react to that. But so far, Australia has implemented it. A couple of European countries as well, and others are in the online to doing so. What about the case in Africa? Are African countries coming in the bandwagon?
Yes. This is now being globalized, the whole concept of plain packaging, and countries are appreciating how well it works. In Africa, as we speak today, no country has yet introduced plain packaging by law, but we are confident that over the next 1 or 2 years, countries in Africa will also follow the same path. They are very good questions and guidance being sought by countries in the region, and we expect that they will join this global movement of introducing plain packaging as a standard in countries in Africa.
So these recommendations are there up to the country to implement them, or is it reinforced by a body within or outside of the WHO to ensure that countries are implementing it? How is this going to work?
The way it works is that there is the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control. This is a global treaty, and it has been signed up. Over 180 countries have ratified it, and therefore it is international law. That treaty has different measures that are obligatory to countries. One of those measures that is obligatory to a country is to introduce a health warning, including pictures, on tobacco packages. That is obligatory. What the countries that have ratified this treaty did some 3-4 years back was to adopt plain packaging as a gold standard for strengthening the obligation requiring pictorial health warning. So although it is not mandatory under the WHO FCPC, it has been adopted by countries that have ratified the FCPC as a gold standard, and as WHO, we are encouraging and urging countries to adopt plain packaging. So if a country does not do plain packaging, there is no sanction. But if a country wants to really use effective tools and measures, then they will go down the path of plain packaging.
So, Dr. Uma, how is it possible to measure the impact of plain packaging in terms of identifying this as the specific reason why people stop smoking, or maybe smoking trend have decreased? For example, with the statistic in Australia, how are we able to measure impact?
Impact is by and large measured by surveys of those who have been affected by the introduction of a new policy, in this case, plain packaging. And it's Australia that we have as a good example, because they've been doing this since 2012. And the surveys cover users, former users. It covers retailers, so that you are able to gather information from different sources, put it together, and get a good picture of how a particular measure is affecting the product. Secondly, in surveys through consumption rates, we look at what was the consumption rate before introduction of this particular measure, and how is the consumption rate after the measure has been introduced, and what are the consumers saying about their reasons for stopping to use that particular product. So we have tools and methodologies that have been very well tested over time, that we can be able to gather material to see, which is not just plain packaging. We are able to tell you what level tax has, what level smoking, buying smoking in public places has in terms of impact of consumption of the product. So we do surveys, we have methodologies that work, and we are able to tell. And indeed, what has been seen in Australia, I am very confident that it will be seen in the UK, which has introduced the plain packaging recently, France, which has done the same, and of course Ireland and Norway, who are just about to join in also introducing plain packaging. I'm confident that the results will be the same. And indeed, when countries in the African region will introduce plain packaging, I expect that it will have a positive impact in reducing tobacco use amongst the population.
Now, Dr. Uma, let's talk about Africa for a second. Can you give us a sense of the impact of tobacco use in Africa?
Yes, Africa is generally a low-resource continent. And as such, infrastructure such as social support and healthcare is not yet reaching the whole population. Now, if you link that to tobacco, and I would like to look at tobacco from three levels. The first level is the growing of the crop. The second is the manufacture of the product. And the third is the use or exposure to the product. And then we'll be able to see how the impact is. If we look at the growing of tobacco, and if you go to tobacco growing communities, the crop is very unkind to the environment, whether it is air or soil or water, and that can be able to be seen in the social system, the environmental system in areas that grow tobacco. So it affects the soil, it affects the water, it affects the environment. This has an impact on food security. Because you cannot be able to eat tobacco, in fact, animals do not eat tobacco. That is why tobacco plants are usually very safe when they are on the farm, because even animals will not eat it because of the poisonous nature of the plant. So but those poisons that are found in the tobacco plant, the strong chemicals that are used during cultivation of the crop have a very negative impact on the farmers, and this has been well recorded throughout the areas that grow tobacco. So there is one level, the growing. Second level is the manufacture, and the manufacture sort of starts with the farmer. They cure the tobacco leaf, And the process of curing, which is used in Africa, is most through burning of firewood, so that the warmth from the burning firewood can be able to cure the tobacco leaf. Now, that process of curing is literally smoking huge amounts of tobacco for the farmer at the same time, because it is a little room that this curing is happening, and the farmer is by and large going in that room to turn his leaves so that they brown properly. And at this certain level, there are a lot of health effects for the farmer. Of course, there's a huge amount of environmental impact, because you cut trees, you cut bushes, anything that's able to be used to burn, for burning so that you can be able to cure the leaf, has a huge impact on, negative impact on the environment. The third level is consumption and exposure. Those who consume or are exposed to tobacco smoke, the health effects are the same. But it's not just the health effects that we see as an impact. There is also the diversion of resources from areas of life like food, shelter, clothing, education, and it all is taken into supporting the habit of tobacco use for a user. And this has an impact in that the families, especially the poor families, are not able to meet their obligations to the other areas of life. Those who are exposed, particularly children and women, and are not users, suffer the same health effects as those who are consumed. And you can imagine children coming down with chest infection, etc., on the basis of a father or a mother smoking in their presence. Mm. So the impact is significant. Even now, when smoking levels are still not as high as in the developed parts of the world, imagine with the rising rate of tobacco use and smoking amongst the young people, our tomorrow is not looking very good in the region unless we do something about it.
And
so we need to address.
Yes, and actually, smoking about the youth is really an important, a critical issue, and we will talk about that. We have to take a short break, Dr. Uma, and when we come back, we will continue this very, very important discussion. My guest today is Dr. Ahmed Uma with the WHO Africa region. We will continue our discussion. We'll be right back, so stay with us. In the meantime, it's time for a break. Before then, we have some health tips with Sanusi Jallo.
According to the organization Tobacco Free Florida, here are some steps to help you quit smoking. Drink a lot of water. Avoid caffeinated beverages like coffee and soda and alcoholic drinks. For some time, try to stay away from places where there will be smoking, like bars, nightclubs, and the outdoor areas of restaurants that allow smoking. Become physically active, whether it's at the gym, with friends, or on your own. Last but not least, get help from your healthcare providers or visit the local centers. These steps can help you become tobacco-free. And that's the wrap-up for the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, you are listening to Health Chat. And today we are discussing tobacco because guess what? Today is World No Tobacco Day, which is marked every year on May 31st. And our guest is Dr. Ahmed Uma. He is Regional Advisor for the Tobacco Control Program in the African region with the WHO World Health Organization. So Dr. Uma, before we took the break, you touched on so many important issues, including secondhand smoking and also smoking among youth. Let's further discuss smoking among youth in Africa, which seems to be a very, very critical issue. It seems like more youth are being lured or convinced or successfully advertised smoking. What is the scope of the problem?
Youth are a group that usually goes with the pack. know, they are easily influenced by their peers. The tobacco industry has understood this well over a long period of time. And they have used that feature of the youth to sell very aggressively their products. They make them look glamorous. They make tobacco look like it is the in thing for now. And this pressure of advertising has resulted in the increase we are seeing today in tobacco use amongst youth. Secondly, the globalization of media, particularly film and TV programs, which are spread around the globe in an instant. The industry has been using these platforms to place their products so that you find characters that smoke, characters that use different forms of tobacco. And the youth are seeing this. They feel the pressure, not from the immediate people, but from seeing what is happening in the media, and they want to copy that. So this has also resulted in pressure on the youth to start the habit. And unfortunately, tobacco is an addictive product. And so when you begin, you get hooked, and you continue. So it's a very sad mix of events that lead the youth to start using tobacco and get hooked at a very young age, and giving us the picture that we're seeing now of youth rates that are more than, well, sometimes even 10 times more, especially amongst girls, if you compare to the adult women in the region. Pressure from industry, direct advertising, pressure from industry, indirect advertising through media like movies and TV programs. And of course, we are also seeing in Africa now an increase in disposable income. The middle class is growing. Our children are getting pocket money. And with the presence of the industry's marketing tactics, they end up tasting. And when they taste, they get hooked and they continue to smoke. It is the single most soft underbelly of the African region, the youth, in as far as smoking is concerned, and we need to place our efforts in trying to reverse this trend.
So, Dr. Huma, what types of regulations are in place? I know that's one of the things we've been discussing. In terms of selling tobacco to youth in African countries, I know in the United States, like when you go and buy alcohol, they ask you for your ID. Is there such a measure when it comes to tobacco and youth in Africa? Because sometimes you see that kids, they're very, very young when they're holding a cigarette.
Yes. If you look at the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, Article 16, it talks about protecting the youth from selling or using tobacco products. At least 15 countries in the region have policy and law that ban youth below the age of 18 to purchase tobacco products. Implementation has always been an issue, but as you can see, 15 out of all 47 countries in our region means that we still have a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we do not have enough countries that have, by law, banned access of tobacco products, but it is work in progress, and this is one key element in fighting the access of youth to tobacco products. Secondly, is information. If you provide information well packaged to the youth, they understand it. And as someone once said, as adults, as parents particularly, we are the largest billboards for the youth. So if we do not use tobacco, the youth are more likely to follow in our path and not use it. But if we look at it as a social thing, or we use it ourselves, then it becomes very difficult for the youth to avoid this particular habit. So information packaged in a way that the youth are going to appreciate, understand, and follow, and of course, topping that up with good law that is banning the sale to and by minors of tobacco products, and enforcing those policies and laws so that we get good compliance by those who are selling. But as it is now, only about 15 or so countries in the region have a law that bans the sale to minors below the age of 18.
So this is an issue also of political will, obviously, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We must get countries to appreciate the need to protect the minors, and we must get the policy change being driven from within the government, and the implementation also being driven from within the government. Political will is an absolute necessity, and we are generating this as we engage with governments in the region, and the results are looking better and better as the years go by.
Now, there's also another issue that is really impacting tobacco control, which is illicit trade of tobacco, which is one of the ways that many people have access to this, to cigarette smoking, whether it's the youth or the adults. And so how do you, there are statistics like it's 1 in 10 cigarettes used in the world is from illegal trade. So that's definitely an issue. And even last year, the WHO addressed illegal trade as its theme for World No Tobacco Day. What type of a difference have we seen on that aspect of the issue?
In fact, since we started actively working with governments to implement the WHO Framework Convention on Tobacco Control, what we have found is that illicit trade had been put under the carpet. In the sense that many governments were not seeing that there is illicit trade. But as we study deeper into how much governments are earning from the tobacco trade, if you look at what the revenue the government is getting vis-a-vis the sheer amount of tobacco products that are being consumed, we have identified very big gaps. A few countries have actually put in place effective measures to address illicit trade, and Kenya, for example, has seen its revenue from tobacco products rise to 4,000%. Let me repeat that, 4,000%.
That's a big increase.
Measures that effectively tax tobacco that is manufactured and imported into the country. So it tells you that the illicit trade that is going on in the region is huge. Governments are losing a lot of money, and we are working with them to strengthen tax administration, to strengthen, patrolling of border points where they always slip through the illicit products, and to also be able to identify the ways that people who are involved in illicit trade, essentially criminals who are involved in illicit trade, to identify the new ways that they are using for purposes of bringing in the cheaper product.
Okay.
So we know the problem is bigger than even the 1 out of every 10.
Yes. Okay. Dr. Umar. Thank you so much for joining us. We have to leave it there because we're out of time. We appreciate your time, Dr. Umar. Thank you so much. And that was...
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
That was Dr. Ahmed Umar, Regional Advisor for the Tobacco Control Program in the African region with the WHO, joining us from Kampala, Uganda. We thank you for listening to our program today, and special thanks to all our affiliates stationed throughout Africa. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Sanusu Diallo for your health news and tips. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.